All right, it's time for another album retrospective. And on this week's Ludini Rock and Roll Circus podcast, we are going to explore Steely Dan's Asia. Get ready to rock out with your talk out. It's the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. I am your ringleader, the great and all-powerful Ludini. And in the studio with us this evening, we have Lily V6. Keith the Hawk Hawkins will be joining us shortly. And we've got Pittsburgh Kevin here as well. Lily, what's going on?
What's up?
Well, I can't hear Lily at
all. Oh, no. Oh. You can't hear me at all. Am I here now?
No, can't hear you, Lily.
F.
Say something, Lily.
Something, Lily.
Something Lily.
Something Lily. Something Lily. Something,
something
Lily.
Can you hear
me now? Am I here?
Lily. Pictures la, of la, Lily. La, la, la,
oh my gosh, don't say that.
Pictures of Lily.
I'm here.
And Mr. Pittsburgh Kevin, what's going on, big guy?
Hey, Yin's guys, what's up?
And again, Mr. Pittsburgh Kevin.
Okay, I'm
going to.
Juice. Give me some juice.
There you are.
There you go.
With Juice Shop, everybody.
Yeah, okay. Boys.
So, as I said, we're going to be getting into Steely Dan's Asia.
Not Aja.
Not Aja.
Not Aja.
Not Aja. No. Not like Austin Powers, Faja.
Faja and Aja.
Aja. Aja Faja. But it's going to be a good show. It's really fun. We have not done a show about Steely Dan ever.
Ever? Like what? In the whole history?
No. No. We were kicking around different ideas on this. Like we were kicking around the idea of like a compare and contrast Steely Dan and Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Steely Dan and Toto. Because some of the guys that played... in Toto, played in Steely Dan as
legit.
Well. Jeff Porcaro is on some Steely Dan stuff. So, but we settled on, hey, let's pick an album like we do. So it's the second week of every month. We pick an album and we do a retrospective. So that's what we're doing today. Real quick shout out to Wolf's Customs. Go to wolfscustoms.online. Get custom a paint job done on your musical instrument of any kind. It matters not. Chris Thunderwolf Dodson and Company can really... make your instrument stand out, look really, really cool, very, very different, so that, you know, when you get up and now shows are starting again, you get out there, you can do something that looks really, really cool and get people's attention. Wolfscustoms.online. RockRageRadio.com is where you want to go to listen to great guitar-driven rock 24/7. You can also hear great shows like this one, as well as what, Lily?
Hot Licks with Lily 6, Thursdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time.
Nice. And I did not pull it together today, and I apologize, but we will announce the winner of the t-shirt thing next week. Sorry.
Anyone who was anticipating.
Yeah, sorry about that, guys. Yeah, things have been a little bit crazy. We do have a winner. I know who it is. I'm just going to say I know who
do
it is. It's Bill Damiano.
Oh,
I know.
Zing.
It's not an inside job. We picked his name out. He's the one that he left us a review. So, Bill, I'll get in touch with you to get your T-shirt size as well, and we'll get you a T-shirt. Speaking of Ludini swag, if you'd like to Ludini merch, go to lulombardimusic.com/RNR Circus. R, like rock and roll circus. RNR Circus. lulombardimusic.com/RNR Circus. There's all kind of stuff there. From totes and caps and mugs and things like that.
Do you have bobbleheads?
We have bobbleheads. Ludini bobbleheads. So Ludini bobbles, but he doesn't fall down. Exactly. I don't know how many of you were going to get that reference. But go check that out, as well as lulombardimusic.com, where you can download all kind of cool stuff and get access to our private Facebook group, where it's all music, no bullshit, no politics, no whatever. Just good times. Good times.
Good times.
Good times.
Yeah.
Yes. So those of you who are on my mailing list, I talked about this in my blast this week, that, you know, Steely Dan is one of the most distinctive bands of all time, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you got to think about what other bands were on the radio, like on rock. I mean, yes, they're sort of the part of the yacht rock thing, but at the same time they were on, they would be on the same stations that were playing Led Zeppelin and Black Sabbath. You know, so it kind of, it's a little bit of a head scratcher. How does this band get on there? And I think it's a testimony to like just the musicality of what they're doing. And it's sort of like, the sort of advanced way that they were doing things at the time. So growing up, you could hear, you know, I mean, like the Pittsburgh rock stations, you know, I was just starting to listen to music and I was trying to pick out, you know, what band was what. And I would tape the radio and, you know, there'd be like Van Halen, Bad Company, Jimi Hendrix. And then this like songs like Peg and Deacon Blues would play. And like it was really cool and I liked it, but it was totally unlike the rest of that kind of music. It was just very interesting the way they were able to kind of do kind of cross over in that way. And anyways, so they've got the jazz influence and all that stuff going. Lily, do you have a little maybe background on the Dan, the Keith the Hawk Hawkins will be joining us. He was wrapping up a drum lesson, so he will be on shortly. I don't want to go too far into it because Keith is a giant Steely Dan.
And he probably has the most knowledge
out of all of us on that. Give us a sort of background.
Sure. So it's the sixth studio album by Steely Dan, released September 23rd, 1977. Jazz rock, recording alongside nearly 40 musicians, band leaders Donald Fagen and Walter Becker, pushed Steely Dan further into experimenting with different combinations of session players while pursuing longer, more sophisticated compositions for the album. It peaked at number 3 on the U.S. charts, number 5 in the U.K., and it became Steely Dan's most commercially successful LP. It spawned a number of hit singles, including Peg, Deacon Blues, and Josie. In July 1978, it won the Grammy Award for Best Engineered Recording, Non-Classical, and received Grammy nominations for Album of the Year and Best Pop Performance by a Duo or Group with Vocals. And actually, something cool, in 2010, the Library of Congress selected the album for preservation in the National Recording Registry for being culturally, historically, and artistically significant. So that's kind of cool, I think, to be chosen by the Library of Congress. Not too many albums got to do that, so pretty cool.
Okay, good stuff. So we can go song by song if you'd like. Do you have any background on the sort of formation of Steely Dan?
I do not have any background on the formation of Steely Dan. If you want to talk about the actual band Steely Dan, you can go ahead and do that.
Well, there's a lot of really interesting things about these guys because they were two guys from suburban New Jersey, Donald Fagen and Walter Becker. They would they were searching for something alternative, something different, something new. They were had come up in that. They were like children of the 50s, and they became part of this sort of like searching for that kind of counterculture thing that started to happen in the 60s. But they were formed in 1971, and they have a kind of interesting background as they had hooked up with Danny D as his backup band. They were looking for Danny was looking for a bass player and a keyboard player for his band. And I think the ad that he ran was something like, you know, must have jazz chops and something like no drama, no hangups. must be able to play jazz and no hangups. And so they started working with him. They just answered an ad, and they drove out there to Long Island, I believe, and started working with that band. And it became obvious that those two, that they were just such great songwriters that band was just doing all of their songs. And so the other members of that band kind of fell away. They just were kind of. Because they couldn't really keep up. Danny Diaz ended up playing later, you know, and stayed consistent and played with Steely Dan for a long time. He's on a lot of stuff. I believe he is on Asia as well. But it's what ended up happening was they just what shook out was it became their band. They sort of took over the band because they just had the songwriting chops together, and they were just always reaching for something deeper, more something deeper, something more sophisticated. They were also backup musicians for Jay and the Americans as well. So yeah, so they were floating around the New York scene, and there's a funny quote from Donald Fagen that, you know, when they had gotten to California, all the characters in their songs were about people from New York, and then when they got back to New York, all the characters in their songs were about people from California.
It's like their travels.
Yeah. So they just they sort of felt a little out of place when they got to the West Coast. It really, because they were just East Coast guys. Mm-hmm. But there is something, and I think that, like, everybody who loves Steely Dan will tell you that, like, they have a kind of, you know, those records from the 70s have that kind of West Coast breezy, mm-hmm. blue-eyed soul kind of, not blue-eyed soul, but that kind of West Coast kind of jazz fusion kind of vibe to them. You know, they brought in different people from different musicians that worked with people like the Doobie Brothers. So Jeff Skunk Baxter, who eventually was in the Doobie Brothers, was in Steely Dan as well. Jeff Beccaro played with Steely Dan, was from Toto, and the very respected and loved guitarist Larry Carlton is all over a number of their albums. He's primarily playing a lot of rhythm on Asia, and they had Larry in there. Larry was a good liaison with the session musicians that they were working with, because they would work the parts out, and they relied on Larry because Larry was a veteran of the LA session scene to kind of communicate what they wanted to the other studio musicians. So as Lily was saying, they sort of became a duo who were working primarily with studio musicians. One of the interesting things about this record is that they didn't just switch musicians around. They would record all the songs or a bunch of the songs with a session band. And then the next day, there would be a whole new band there.
Completely different, yeah.
You know, and they didn't just swap out musicians. So this was something that really made them unique. But they were just really reaching for something very, very specific. They knew what they wanted. They knew what they wanted to hear. Also, we should mention that Walter Becker. Who actually is a great guitarist. And one of the things about Steely Dan is they're known for is all the great guitar players that, like, came through that band. We mentioned Larry Carlton. We mentioned Jeff Baxter, Denny Diaz. Mark Knopfler is on an album with them. Jay Graydon, Dean Parks. I mean, these are like a list of who's who guitar players from that era.
From this album.
We're going to go down the list here in a minute.
Yeah, a whole page.
But Walter Becker was a dynamite guitar player in his own right. Just absolutely a monster player. And I think with them using all the different musicians was that they just wanted to get the absolute right guy on the absolute
song.
They didn't. There was no ego about, you know, who was who. And the other person we need to mention real quickly is one of Kevin's favorite singers,
Pee Wee Herman.
Yes.
Oh no, Pee-wee Herman. Michael McDonald.
the Doobie Brothers Mark II frontman.
Yeah.
Michael McDonald sang "What a Fool Believes" and "Taking It to the Streets" and all the songs was a part of Steely Dan, and yeah. You could hear him clearly on Peg, on this record. It's just, you know, it just stands right. It's every time I hear that harmony, man, it just puts a big freaking smile on my face. It's just absolutely beautiful.
So basically, they were perfectionists. Let's get this right person for this right part for this song.
Yeah, they just like were just hammered at it. I think the record took about a year to do. I think we're going to get into, you
10
know,
minutes.
Get into, yeah. Okay, we're going to get into studio and we're going to come out in 3 weeks and it's going to be done, you know, and this was not, this was, they didn't work the same way that a lot of other acts work. The other thing that they did was very often they would work on lyrics and music simultaneously, which is something that, you know, if you're a musician or a songwriter, sometimes it's, you know, you're concentrating on one or the other. They were able to kind of, they did this a lot. They worked on them together. You said you have the list?
The list of all the musicians on this album?
Yeah, just write them down real
just,
quick.
Just rattle them off, huh? So we have Victor Feldman, Joe Sample, Paul Griffin, Michael Omartian?
Michael Omartian.
Yeah. Omartian.
Michael Omartian,
okay.
Went on to become a really, he became a Grammy award-winning producer.
Oh.
And produced a, and I do not remember the name of the Rod Stewart album, but won a Grammy for it. He produced, remember Christopher Cross, who sang Sailing?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He produced that album.
Oh, okay.
And and he's a dynamite piano player and was also very successful in Christian music.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's probably why I don't know who that
is.
There we go. Don Grolnick, Larry Carlton, Lee Ritenour, Dean Parks, Steve Kahn, Denny Diaz, like you said, Paul Humphrey, Rick Marotta, Ed Green, Steve Gadd, Bernard Purdy, Jay Graydon, Chuck Rainey, Jim Keltner, Gary Coleman, not that one, Tom Scott, Wayne Shorter, Pete, and I don't know how to pronounce this last name. Chris Lieb,
that's how I'd say it.
Jim Horn, Bill Perkins, Plas Johnson, Jackie Kelso, Chuck Finley, Lou McCreary, Dick Hyde, Michael McDonald, Timothy B. Schmidt, Clyde King, Shirley Matthews, Vanetta Fields, and Rebecca Lewis.
Timothy B. Schmidt.
Now, you guys know who Timothy B. Schmidt is?
I do not.
He's an Eagle.
I probably didn't know that, Eagle, actually.
Yes.
Wow, and there it is. And that's the list of all the musicians on this particular album. Along with, of course,
one album.
Donald Fagen and Walter Becker.
Yeah, of course.
And they were there too.
I mean, they're the, you know, up there. Here's their names and here's everyone else.
So.
But you did send me earlier the documentary that I did not watch, but I sort of like was reading a lot about it from the classic album series. It was released in 1999. It featured a song-by-song study of the album. The only one that they didn't do a study on was I Got the News, but it is played during the closing credits. I found that interesting because some people think that that's like sort of like the boring song on the album, I guess.
So if we go to rank the tracks, I Got the News.
Well, I mean, you can rank it wherever you want to, but that's what I've been reading.
Well, let's just put it this way. All the songs
are good.
They are. What I was going to say was we use songfacts.com for information. So now you know our big secret. All the songs on this album have a Songfacts page, except for I Got the News.
But I do have a little bit of information on it. Not
so
much.
Let's go ahead and talk about it. If you have a little information on it, let's
not much on I Got the News, but a little bit.
It's a song on the album. Thanks, Lily.
It is. Yeah. Oh, I think I already told you everything I have to say about it. It is often said that this is the weak song on the album. It is omitted in the documentary, save for playing it in the closing credits. The lyrics allude to going down on someone.
What?
No. And it's a fling song. It's a fling song, and people say it's a filler song for the. But it's a little deeper than that. The singer has the news. Like, he knows what's going on in the girl's mind. He knows what's happening. Like a prophet, and then you don't care much about much else except for going or getting the occasional good time with this female. So that's all I have about it. But yeah, that's what I caught from the lyrics as well. So towards the end there with
I had read about the name, and they just picked the name because they were like, they had played with so many people that they were like, you know, this band is, you know, it's not going to do anything. You know, it'll be over in a month or two, and then we'll be doing something else. So they just said, you know, Steely Dan. And Steely Dan is what? The name of a dildo.
Yes. Yes.
So, and I thought, no, it's a reference to something deeper than that. It comes from something
deeper.
I said
Sorry.
Deeper.
It's going to play off that.
But they just were like, oh, nobody's going to, you know, even know what this is, and you know, we'll be on to another band before you know it. And it just goes to show you guys, be careful what you name your band, because
it's gonna be there forever,
and it might end up being there forever. I don't think, you know, when you hear those guys talk, you don't get the impression that they're in any way embarrassed, you know, about it. Although they were kind of like, guys that played with them said that, you know, they had a kind of sophisticated kind of sense of humor, so there were no fart jokes. That wasn't their thing. They, I guess, you know, they saved that for bands like Foghat. But
oh boy,
what can you do? So, what do you got? Let's go ahead and so we hit. I Got the News, which is, you know, some people say, yeah, it's not the greatest song of the record, but I mean, on a record like this, Black Cow, Asia, Deacon Blues, Peg, Home at Last, Josie, I mean, Criminy, you know, these are like all,
you can't
like,
say anything bad.
These are all freaking amazing songs.
If that's the weak song, then it's not, they're not doing too bad. So, well, let's start at the beginning. So side one, Black Cow, opening song, has a number of lyrical interpretations, a troubled relationship, an ode to self-doubt, commentary on nightlife, a reference to Hindu culture, because cows are sacred and all. Or it could be about, I can't say this, Thelonious Monk.
Thelonious, good.
Yeah, okay, right. Thank goodness. Okay, the American jazz composer who's often regarded as the father of bebop. Starts out with this guy talking about the girl he used to be involved with. Fagin said she's sitting at a counter and he describes her behavior and habits. And out of that, you begin to see her character and their relationship. He added that the black cow is a beverage.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Which I've never had, but I've seen in many movies. Depending on where you live, it can be a milkshake or a Coke float, like root beer float, but with Coke. But it's something you would get at a soda Coke. Fountain. Not that kind of Coke. where the song takes place. In the 50s, Fagin and Becker spent a lot of time at these soda fountains. This was never released as a single, but it earned lots of airplay on FM radio and became a Steely Dan favorite, with the band often playing it in concert. It was released on the B-side of Josie and the Pussycats. JK.
Lead vocals and synthesizer are Donald Fagin. Guitar is Larry Carlton. Chuck Rainey, the amazing Chuck Rainey on bass on this. Paul Humphrey on drums. Clavinet played by Joe Sample, who is very well-respected jazz artist. And backing vocals, Clyde King, Rebecca Lewis, Shirley Matthews, and Vanetta Fields. So this is just one of those bands. They played this song. So that's why there's so many musicians on an album with seven songs.
Yeah.
Every song is like a different band.
Right.
And there's horn sections and all kind of stuff all over this. The multi-track masters for Black Cow and the song Age have gone missing, which makes it impossible to do surround sound versions of these tracks. Hmm. In the liner notes to the stereo remaster of the Asia album, the band offered $600 reward for information leading to the return.
$600. You got more cash? Money than that.
They talk about in the documentary that a Black Cow is, depending on where you're from, like some kind of malt.
I've never had, but I've seen in movies. It looks kind of gross.
Well, I think if you took root beer and you put ice cream in it.
I hate root beer and I can't eat ice cream.
Okay. Oh.
So there's that.
Do you like root beer floats?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We should be drinking Black Cows right now with rum or something.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's some it. Us, and then I'll be going to your bathroom every 5 minutes.
You know what's really good? And it's a shame you can't. You're lactose intolerant. Is I make these awesome milkshakes with vanilla ice cream and mudslide.
Oh,
let's kick ass, man! It is so good.
I mean, if I want to be sick, I'll do.
maybe someday a neighbor will come over and you can make them for.
Someday I'll have a neighbor that can tolerate lactose.
Right.
Lily, you're so intolerant.
I know.
You know, this is supposed to be the era of tolerance.
Yeah. Come on.
What's
wrong with you?
Right. Well, according to everyone, I'm a millennial, so I tolerate nothing. So there's that.
Oh, yeah. Great opening track. Great funk. Like, you know, that's the thing about this record. There's a lot of funk stuff on it, but it's not like James Brown, like
it's
hard
not that
funk.
Kind of funk.
It's more like chill. It's like, it's like real, like a lot of it's real laid back, which is an interesting feeling. You know, it's just a complete, not a juxtaposition, and other people have done it, but it's something that's like a kind of a Steely Dan trademark specifically on this record. Black Cow, what do you want? You want to do Asia?
Yeah, let's do Asia. That's the big guy, right? Musically, it's a tonally sophisticated and structurally complex work that was praised on its release as the most ambitious track the duo had ever attempted. This is the longest song on the album at almost 8 minutes. The song's lyrics center around the interior monologue of a man who runs to the title character to escape the stresses of his life up on the hill. Fagan claimed that it was inspired by a relative of someone he knew who had married a Korean woman named Asia. He had described the song as being about the tranquility that can come of a quiet relationship with a beautiful woman. Despite its complexity and unlike most of the other tracks on the album, Asia took a very short time to record, which Steely Dan credit to the musician's ability to learn it quickly without rehearsals. I'm sorry, I'm coughing today. In the late 90s, when Becker and Fagan were putting together a remastered version of the album as part of the series reissues on compact disc, they found, like Lou said, the master tapes. That's the whole $600 thing. We're not going to repeat that. They said, this is not a joke, happy hunting. While Asia has not been played as frequently on the radio as the album's three singles, Deacon Blues, Peg, and Josie, it has become a staple of the Steely Dan live concert since the band resumed touring in the 1990s. Never saw them live, though.
This band, they did not tour a lot. A buddy of mine saw them on one of their early tours, and they were touring with the Beach Boys.
Oh, fun.
Wow.
And everybody was there to see the Beach Boys. And like while Steely Dan was playing, like a lot of people were like not paying attention and not like talking. And Alex told me that he was like, he jumped up on the stage while they were playing to kind of support them. You know what I mean? Because he felt bad that like, he was like, these morons don't even know what the hell they're listening to. Check out the rhythm section on this song though. Chuck Rainey and Steve Gadd. I mean, that's the freaking monster. Gadd is, I wish Keith was on, is the most famously known as the drummer that plays the drum beat to on 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover.
Oh.
Which is a really total signature.
Mm-hmm.
That's Steve mm-hmm. Gadd. But Victor Feldman is on a lot of this stuff, and he remained completely consistent, like member, if you will, of Steely Dan. And he's a percussionist, vibraphone, things like that. Again, Michael Amardian on mm-hmm. Piani, and Wayne Shorter, the incomparable Wayne Shorter on jazz saxophone, played with Miles Davis and things like that, is on this as well. And bass, drums, electric piano, percussion, piano, and tenor saxophone. No guitar. That song sucks.
Automatically, Lou vetoes the song. Why are
you paying attention to it?
Turn your mic up.
Turn my mic up.
Yes.
Turn up the microphone. Oh, do you guys know who Kenny Arnoff is?
I don't know that name.
Kenny Arnoff is a session drummer. He's played with toured and was a member of John Mellencamp's band for many years. But I saw him with Melissa Etheridge. He's played with Stevie Nicks, Joe Jackson,
who we talked about last
Bob
week.
Dylan, and a bunch of other people. He talks about Gadd's work on Asia in his list of top five drum performances of all time. He told Song Facts, everybody knows that this was absolute genius. Steve Gadd, his musicality, his iconic drum fills, his feel, his delicacy, the balance on the drum kit, he did it in one take. Every take they did was a full take with the whole band playing together. That was a performance. So no, like, oh, we'll punch that in later. No.
Nice.
Just like that. Just play it again.
Boom.
Yeah, there's on that documentary, Dean Parks said that the way that they did 6 hour sessions, and they would do the first 3 hours, and they'd break for lunch into the second 3 hours. And he says many times they would go in there and he would be like, this isn't going anywhere. This is going to either not be used on the album or it's not going to work or whatever. And they'd come back from lunch and it would be together. They would just be able to do
perfect.
It.
Spot
you
on.
Know, so sometimes
it's a neat break.
Yeah. Sometimes crazy. That's it. You know, work on something, go away for a little bit, come back and you can put it together.
Nice.
Yeah. That's cool. So far we've talked about I Got the News real quick, but we talked about Black Cow and Asia. Now this is a great song we're going to get into right here. This is one of my favorite Steely Dan. So this is one of this is like a song you kind of get boozy to, you know what I mean, and maybe feel a little sorry for yourself. You know, sometimes it feels good to kind of like brood a little. Mm-hmm, this is a good mm-hmm. brooding song. Mm-hmm. So Deacon Blues
mm-hmm, mm-hmm. peaked at number 19 on Billboard and reached number 40 on the Easy Listening chart.
Easy listening. I like that easy listening.
The concept of the expanding man, says Fagan, that opens the song may have been inspired by Alfred Bester's The Demolished Man. Walter and I were major sci-fi fans. You know, I noticed that a lot of times when we do these, the musicians are sci-fi fans. Like, I always find that.
Hendrix was a big love science mm-hmm. fiction. That's like mm-hmm. a thing. That's like a thing, you know. Absolutely.
The guy in the song imagines himself
Led Zeppelin and Lord of the Rings and all
yeah,
that.
Well, yeah, that's, mm-hmm. well, that's very nerdy, but that's okay. I'm okay with it.
Well, we've talked to, and a lot of, you know, you love Iron Maiden, and a lot of their songs
oh,
are
I
based
know.
On
oh, there's yeah. very
stories
sci-fi,
and yeah. mythologies and things like
well,
that.
Well, the mythology
yeah.
I can get down with. It's a sci-fi I'm not so sure about.
Oh, my.
The song imagines himself ascending to levels of evolution, expanding his mind, his spiritual possibilities, and his options in life. The song's protagonist, Muses Fagan, is somewhat autobiographical in that that it reflected the dreams Fagan and Becker had about becoming jazz musicians while living in the suburbs. Characterized as a loser by Becker, the song's subject was meant to reflect a broken dream of a broken man living in a broken life. In 2013 memoir, Eminent Hipsters, I have not read this, but Fagan gave credit to Norman Mailer as an inspiration for the narrator's persona. On the origin of the song's name, Fagan said it was inspired by a football player, Deacon Jones, as they like the sound of his name. The song was the duo's fifth top 20 hit on the Billboard Hot 100 chart in the U.S., where it peaked at number 19, like I said before. Deacon Blues remained in the top 40 for 8 weeks. Billboard particularly praised the outstanding saxophone playing of the song.
Learn to work the saxophone.
Saxophone.
I play just what I feel. Drink scotch whiskey all night long and die behind the wheel. At the time, so the lyrics are, they call Alabama the Crimson Tide.
Mm-hmm.
And like I never understood what the words were for years. A few years ago, I looked them up. I'm like, what? And it says a reference to the University of Alabama's football powerhouse national championship of 73, losing just one game in each of their next two seasons under the direction of the famous coach Paul Bear Bryant. Alabama is known as the Crimson Tide, a grandiose name the Steely Dan's Walter Becker and Donald Fagan found amusing.
They have very weird sense of humor.
Well, that is it. That is it. And I remember reading an interview with them many years ago in the 80s in Musician Magazine where, wow, that was a little loud.
Sorry.
That's fine. I'm just kidding you. Where they, you know, they struggled, but they said it was a delicate balance with the lyrics between being funny, but like they knew you could get into Weird Al territory.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
You could get, they didn't want to be like a comedic type thing.
They didn't want to be a caricature.
Yeah. You know what I mean? They didn't want to like, they want to be taken seriously as musicians. They knew if they went, and there were many times like the, Gary Katz would be like, they'd be in the studio writing and they'd be laughing their asses off. And he'd be like, all right, knock it off. I know you guys aren't doing even getting any work done in there. Don't even tell me you're working because you're just laughing. And so that was a big thing. They have this kind of sense of, they're very like kind of literary mm-hmm. kind of guys. So they loved playing around with words and turns of phrases. And oh, did you mention this? The Scottish rock group Deacon Blue, who enjoyed seven top 20 UK hits between 88 and 94, took their name from this song.
I didn't know that.
How about that?
But I actually did not look at song facts for my stuff today.
So it's just fun to do. We might as well run down the list again. Lead vocal synthesizer Donald Fagan. Walter Becker plays bass on this. The irrepressible and incomparable Bernard Purdy is on drums. Victor Feldman is playing electric piano. He's playing the Fender Rhodes. Larry Carlton and Lee Ritenour.
There you go.
Two massive wow. jazz fusion giants on guitars. That Pete Christlieb is playing the saxophone.
Oh.
Clyde King, Shirley Matthews, and Vanetta Fields once again doing the background vocals. interesting. 12-second intro on the track is one of the most distinctive openings in rock. It was created by having guitarist Larry Carlson and piano player Victor Feldman play the same chords, which were layered together with drummer Bernard Purdy's cymbals.
And this is the other long song on the album.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very long, very fun, though. Like, just really, like a really totally chill song. Yeah, they really had dreams of being, you know, jazz musicians. But jazz just, you know, it was really kind of fading, you know, out. And I love jazz, but it just did not have the, when the Beatles happened.
Yep.
It didn't have that.
Well, there's a lot, you know how, like, you've said, man, you know, and a lot of people have said who loved 80s rock, like, you know, kind of hate grunge because they feel like it killed their favorite music.
Right.
There's a lot of jazz musicians who absolutely hate the Beatles.
Oh, yeah, and I get it. I see.
Hate the Beatles. They're like, because, you know, they were really like,
they killed their vibe.
Yeah, they killed their vibe. And it really isn't the Beatles' fault. It just is what happened in music. And it's funny because I was telling Kevin before we started that I was watching a documentary about James Brown. And, you know, what was his name? Maceo Parks, who is like one of the main, like, featured sax player soloist in his band, mm-hmm. was like, well, I took the gig because I think, well, I could finance my jazz career.
Right.
Yeah.
Not so much.
You know what I mean? James Brown became his career. Mm-hmm. So a lot of these guys, you know, love jazz, but it just, you know, this is what ended up happening instead. So we've hit on Black Cow, Asia Deacon Blues, and now it's time for...
Before we get to side two. We do have some people watching. We got Bill Damiano, who heard about his winning.
Woo-hoo.
And that's what he said.
All right.
So there's that.
Hey, Bill, message me with your size. And go to, listen to me, bud. Go look at, tell me which t-shirt you want. LouLombardiMusic.com/RNRCircus. And let me know what you like, and I'll get you whatever you want.
And Chris Thunderwolf is on, watching, of course. Jeff Mazzy, I think, is how you say it. He said, Asia is such a platform for many players, such as Carlton, Jay Graydon, and was a breakthrough in fusion scene. I just played the album today. And that's who we have talking. I don't know who we have watching because I can't see everybody who's watching. So,
okay, guys. That. Thank you so much, Ray. And we appreciate the comments, of course. So, Peg, which was we were mentioning earlier, just, you know, you can hear the mm-hmm. future Doobie Brother himself, like, very prominently. But go ahead, Lou.
It was released as a single, reached number 11 in 1978 with a chart run of 19 weeks. It's tied with Ricky Don't Lose That Number and Hey 19 for being their longest running chart hit. It's been described as a sunny pop song with layers of jazzy vocal harmonies, and it features a fusion jazz and some rock elements. With the blues at its core, though it might not be apparent at first listen, the song's guitar solo was attempted by seven top studio session guitarists before Jay Graydon's version became the keeper. He worked on that song for about 6 hours before the band was satisfied. Although there was speculation that the name was a reference to Broadway star and one-time Hollywood actress Peg Entwistle in 2000, the band said that the song was written about a real person, but not Entwistle. In 2020, Donald Fagen said there is no hidden meaning. We just wanted a dotted half note for the song, or for that spot, and Peg was the short enough to fit with the music. Fagen added that the song takes place at a seedy photo shoot in L.A. from the perspective of a jilted boyfriend. It has been described as the perfect Steely Dan song and one of the strangest hits to ever grace the mainstream. The song was used as the theme music for a celebrity paparazzi segment for the syndicated news magazine Entertainment Tonight from 81 to 85.
What? I didn't know that. Wow.
So a little trivia.
As Lily said, it's about an aspiring actor. Given where the band got its name, you kind of wonder what kind of actress Peg is. What kind of movies is Peg in? One's featuring a Steely Dan.
Whoa. Ah, zing.
Peg?
As we've been mentioning all along, Becker and Fagen were very particular about the choice of musicians, and this has Michael McDonald singing the background mm-hmm. vocals, and Jay Graydon played the guitar solo. McDonald's famous for his work with Doobie Brothers, of course, and as a solo artist, Graydon is a very successful producer-songwriter in addition to his work as a guitarist. According to Graydon, Becker and Fagen brought in seven or eight guitarists to try the solo and worked him for about 6 hours, as Lily said. Listen, it's not Behind the Music. Classic Albums.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
On the Classic Albums, they actually play some bits of the other guitarists, and they don't say who's who. I'm imagining Walter Becker took a pass at it, and with all the guys in the studio, I would imagine probably Lee Ritenour took a pass, and Larry Carlson, they probably all took a pass. But Jay's solo, and it's such an interesting solo. It starts out with that little, it's like real sparse, you know what I mean? It doesn't
almost
really kind of...
Almost a Hawaiian slide kind of feel to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he builds it up very slowly. He doesn't like come out of the gate, like, you know, really with a lot of stuff. You know, it's kind of very. Right. I was if Sirius XM just finished their month. They had a guitar channel because April was National Guitar Month, and they gave a lot of guitarists their own show, and John Frusciante, Dave Navarro, different people like that, Nancy Wilson.
Ooh.
But Dave Navarro had this as one of his favorite solos of all time, and just kind of felt like, you know, Graydon kind of doesn't get the credit that he should have. He worked later on. Graydon worked with people like Manhattan Transfer, Al Jarreau, and George Benson, who were all. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, we would put them all in the yacht rock kind of category later on. He was very particular and works hard to get the exact desired sound. Working with Egos and the business side of music industry were on Graydon, and he stopped working in the late 80s, something he could afford since he continued receiving song royalties and kept his expenses in check. In 08, he teamed up with ace songwriter Randy Goodrum to form the band Jar, J-A-R, whose first album, Scene 29, had a Steely Dan feel. Graydon says, it's like Steely Dan because of the following. The lyrics are intelligent and really cool ideas. Chord changes are very melodic, hinging on jazz sometimes. Melodies are memorable. It's intelligent West Coast pop music. I think it's the best record I've been involved with. We spent 2 years on this, and I didn't mind any minute of it. I couldn't wait to get in the studio every night. So that's a good place to be, right? When you can't wait to get to work. Mm-hmm. That's when you know you're like...
That's when you know it's a good job.
That's when you know you're really enjoying it. Let's get real quickly, the musicians on this. Chuck Rainey, again, on bass. Rick Marotta on drums. Clavinet was played by Don Groenick.
Grolnick.
I can't see. There's that looks like an eye. It looks like groin. I apologize. It's not groin. Grolnick. Electric piano, Paul Griffin. Steve Kahn playing guitar, who's another session ace. Of course, Graydon played the solo. It's Tom Scott, the famous Tom Scott, LA Express fame. And percussionist Gary Coleman. Not that Gary Coleman.
Not that one.
And again, Victor Feldman. and real quick, De La Soul. Remember De La Soul?
Yes.
Groove is in the heart. sampled the refrain, I Know I Love You Better, on their 1989 track, I Know.
Hmm.
I Know, like I.
I Know. I Know.
Zing.
Zing 'em. All right, so pick. Michael McDonald said that the harmony, you know, he's such a badass, and he said the harmonies were so tight on this, the notes were so close together that he really struggled to get it, and that Fagan and Becker were like insane perfectionists about like even how like how you pronounce the words and everything, and it really almost sounds like something I always thought of when I heard the song. Was the way he does his harmonies. I mean, the voice is an instrument, of course, but it sounds like an instrument. It almost doesn't even sound like singing in a way, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It's so like, it's like a keyboard
like
or something.
It's
you know what I mean?
Layered in there. Yeah.
It's really, really, really cool. And that's what you get, guys, whenever you take a lot of time and you work really, really hard and you have a lot of attention to detail. This is something that I think a lot of modern artists just kind of like aren't down with.
That's what they're lacking.
And the music of this era, the great classic rock era, a lot of these artists start, you know, going back to the Beatles, etc., it was extreme attention to detail to just get it exactly right. And you see this over and over and over with some of the great acts, including, of course, Steely Dan. The next song we're talking about is what, Lily?
Home at Last.
Okay.
The song is based on the epic novel The Odyssey by Homer. It is one of my favorite books. The hero Ulysses is trying to get home across the ocean after the Trojan War, but the gods keep making it difficult. He's ever hopeful to get back to his wife and son. It's a metaphor for Walter Becker and Donald Fagen pining away for their native New York from across the country in Southern California. And here we might be seeing Fagen's old English lit degree kind of coming into play because he did have that. So yes. He's talked about the Odyssey, which is all I have on that song.
There's a story about Ulysses, not Ulysses S. Grant.
Oh.
But tales of brave Ulysses.
Yes.
They were home. They had made it back. And along the way, they had taken the four winds and they had put them in a bag.
Mm-hmm.
And as they pulled into port, Ulysses decided, before we walk in like big heroes, I'm going to lay down and take a nap. When he lays down and take a nap, his crew thinks that he's hiding gold. And when he opens the bag, the winds are released and they are blown across the world. And yep. It takes him years. And when he comes back, he has no crew. He has nothing. He just ends up barely getting back by the skin of his teeth by himself. There's a lesson knowing Greek. If you understand anything about Greek mythology, there's a lesson there, which I'm not going to get into. You can play around with that with yourself. But I just think it's a really interesting story of like, you know, kind of like, don't screw it up, you know. Yeah, yeah. Don't, like, you know, you're there, don't piss around with it. Bernard Purdy's drumming, you know, of course you have lead vocals by, of course, the Donald Fagen. Guitar solo this time is by the man himself, Walter Becker. Timothy B. Schmidt on backing vocals. Guitar again by Larry Carlton. As I said earlier, he's all over this album as a kind of like a co-arranger, rhythm guitar player, kind of keeping that together. Chuck Rainey and Victor Feldman. So there are some folks, if you have noticed, they kind of keep showing back up on this album. This beat, Bernard Purdy called the Purdy Shuffle. They were like, well, we don't really want to shuffle, and we want something that's kind of halftime. So he came up, so he had his own style, and that is, just for lack of a better term, known as the Purdy Shuffle. And let me kind of explain it to you in terms of that you could relate to, that you may know other songs. Rosanna by Toto, that's the Purdy Shuffle. Fool in the Rain by Led Zeppelin, that's the Purdy Shuffle. Okay, that's that kind of like halftime shuffle feel. So instead of, it's like, it's got that kind of thing. Again, if Hawk was here, he'd be like, he could explain it way better.
He could explain it from a drummer's
perspective. Yeah, he could give a way better explanation of it. Ken Tucker from Rolling Stone wrote, "What Asia offered was just about the opposite of the quirky, opaque little pop tunes with Becker and Fagen that started their career. The album allowed lots of pop fans to feel they'd penetrated the cool precincts of jazz at exactly that moment when cool was making a comeback via disco. For the first time, really, a massive audience had gotten a bead on Steely Dan, and millions liked what they deduced, hit makers behaving like cult artists." I think that's a kind of succinct way of explaining what they were doing here. And we already talked about I Got the News. So what's left? Josie. When Josie Comes Home. great song. Great song. I love this song. Go ahead.
Released as the third single from the album and performed modestly well, is what I read, reaching number 26 on the Billboard and 44 on the Easy Listening chart that year.
Easy Listening.
It has appeared on several Steely Dan live and compilation albums. Becker and Fagen wrote an early version of Josie well before the recordings for Asia took place. While most of the songs on the album fuse jazz with rock, all music critic Stuart Mason describes Josie as the album's most conventional rock song. Nonetheless, Josie incorporates many jazz chords. What he said is, it's a tasty ditty about a community girl in the truest sense of the word. The lyrics describe the boys of the neighborhood celebrating the return of a fun-loving girl named Josie, who may have a shady past and anticipating the debauchery that may ensue. She may even be returning from prison.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So,
Josie.
Prison yeah. girls. Featuring, again, Chuck Rainey on bass. Jim Keltner on drums on this one. Mm-hmm. Legendary guitar work by both Dean Parks and Larry Carlton. Victor Feldman again. Walter Becker actually plays the guitar solo on this. And, of course, Donald Fagen, the unmistakable Donald Fagen. Timothy B. Schmidt appears also on singing backup, and he also appears on Pretzel Logic and the Royal Scam, sang backup on the track. Later joined the Eagles, of course. And as we mentioned earlier, that's him singing the lead on I Can't Tell You Why. Really cool song, kind of like a...
I like the name.
Yeah, kind of like a blue-eyed... kind of like a... not that's the word I want. It's a kind of... like Chicago soul, Bobby Blue Bland kind of mm-hmm. thing underneath it, with just these amazing chord changes and these this little interlude, dun 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 dun, 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 you know, all that stuff in there is really neat. Dun 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 dun, 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 you know, all that. It's a kind of a, you know, in some ways the heart of it is a kind of basic song, kind of like a basic kind of R&B blues kind of thing, but they added all these other sections to it that like take it to a new place, I guess is what I'm trying to say. So there you have it, guys, a little shout out and a little salute to Steely Dan's Aja.
Yeah, I was going to say, Lou, you and I like were kids when this came out, and think about the music we were listening to back in 77, 76 and stuff like that. It was very, very much rock and roll. And all of a sudden this band puts this album out, and it's our introduction to jazz, to fusion, and it's done so well that we dug it. You know, we dug it, and it introduced us to a whole new genre of music. And I think that as we grew up and became musicians, I think that like kind of bled into what we play, you know, because we still have that kind of nice fusion feel to some of the stuff that we do and some of the stuff we still like today. So awesome album.
Yeah, it's I think you make a good point that it kind of got kids who maybe would never even consider jazz to look at this and say, who's this Wayne Shorter guy? Mm-hmm. Who's Lee Ritenour? Mm-hmm. Oh, what are these guys doing? Like, they sound pretty good. Like, maybe I should check out some of their stuff. I don't know if that was, I just think that that's what Becker and Fagen wanted to hear. I don't think it was like premeditated like that, but I think that it's definitely, it's no different than, people hearing the Rolling Stones and then wanting to go back and listen to Howlin' Wolf, exactly. or listening to Led Zeppelin and want to know who Willie Dixon is.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Steely Dan had that exact effect on, you know, kids that were just, you know, didn't know anything else except rock and roll. Peter Frampton, Johnny Winter, Foghat, those were the kind of like bands that were really rocking the mm-hmm, like mid-70s mm-hmm. thing, Ted Nugent mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And like this guy, these guys come out and they sound nothing like that.
Right.
But somehow they're kind of getting over with rock people.
Yeah.
It's that doesn't happen a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It's really interesting. On this day in 1965, Roger Miller was at number one on the U.S. country charts with King of the Road. Boom. Boom, boom. Trailer for Sale or Rent.
Now that you mentioned Top of the Pops last week, it's like popping up everywhere for me, by the way.
This day in 74, Led Zeppelin attended an Elvis Presley show in Los Angeles at the Forum.
Nice.
After a shaky start to the show, Elvis stopped the band and jokingly said, "Wait a minute, if we can start together, fellas, because we've got Led Zeppelin out there. Let's try to look like we know what we're doing."
That's great.
I never knew that. That's freaking hilarious. And I like more respect for Elvis now. All four members of Zeppelin met with Elvis after the show, spending over 2 hours backstage. Elvis asked for all the group's autographs for his daughter, Lisa Marie.
Aw.
Speaking of sadness, this day in 1981, Jamaican singer-songwriter Bob Marley died at the age of 36. He was found to have a malignant melanoma under the nail of a toe.
Ooh.
Weird.
Yeah. What a weird spot.
Weird, man. That's just some screwed up stuff. Nah, I don't really want to do that.
Oh, my.
In 1991, Roxette scored their fourth U.S. Single with Joyride.
Yeah.
Yes. I think that's a band that, from the 90s that Lily likes.
I love that band.
I love it, too.
The song was inspired by an interview with Paul McCartney, who said writing songs with John Lennon had been a joyride.
Mm. Freaking love Roxette.
Mm-hmm.
On this day in ninth, little sad news. On this day in 96, Bill Graham, the Irish journalist credited with discovering U2, died of a heart attack at the age of 44. He was also the co-founder of the Irish music paper Hot Press. Members from remember Clannad?
Yes.
U2, Hot House Flowers, and Gavin Friday all attended the funeral. On this day in 2001. Oasis, the Black Crowes, and Space Hog kicked off the tour of Brotherly Love. Yeah. North American tour at the Hard Rock in Las Vegas, Nevada. All three bands featured pairs of brothers. And cool, huh?
Meanwhile, Liam and Noel were probably beating the shit out of each other.
So did the Robinson brothers. They had issues as well. It's something about brothers. Do you know who Eric Burdon is, Lily?
I'm going to read it. Yes, now I do.
Singer of the Animals was born this day in 1941.
I don't know the names of the older
Les Chadwick, Jerry and the Pacemakers, was born this day in 1943. Fun. Butch Trucks, American drummer with the Allman Brothers, played on Eat a Peach.
Is he the uncle of Derek?
Yeah, I believe he's the uncle of Derek Trucks.
Yes, Derek.
Born on this day in 1947.
All right.
Hold on a second.
Christoph.
Do you know this? Go ahead.
From Rammstein.
Go ahead.
1966, Christoph from the drummer from Rammstein. It's his birthday.
Happy birthday, Mr. Rammstein.
And there it is.
Who else? It was another birthday this week. It was somebody really famous. Who was it?
Who was it, Lou? Lou, who was it?
Who was it?
Who was born this week?
I know.
Lou?
Bono was born yesterday.
So was Lou Lombardi.
Oh,
Lou!
Yeah. That's right. I actually was not thinking that was
birthday.
not like trying to goad people to wish me happy birthday. I swear it wasn't. But it was that's right. Bono was born on May 10th. He was born this week. So happy birthday to the man himself. Bono.
And I actually did want to point out we didn't talk about the cover art at all of the album.
Let's talk about the cover art.
Which I think is amazing. It is the Japanese. I don't know her name, but it's a Japanese model. I love the simplicity of the black background with the really bright colors. I think it says a lot about the album. So, and the font and everything. I know I'm a graphic designer by trade, so that's why I like all that sort of thing. I just think it's fantastic. It's so simple, but it's so beautiful. So I just want to throw that out there.
Sometimes less is more.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. All right, Asia by Steely Dan. This day in music, we hit that as well. You guys have been listening to Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. Go to LouLombardiMusic.com. If you want some Ludini swag, LouLombardiMusic.com/RNRCircus. Bill already messaged me, so we're going to get him straightened out with a t-shirt.
Sweet.
As well. RockRageRadio.com. Download the app. When can we hear Hot Licks with Lily Six again?
That is Thursday, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, rockrageradio.com, or download the free app to your phone. I am having tons of interviews coming up, so stay tuned for all of those.
Cool. Interesting. Good stuff. All right, guys, thanks so much for hanging out. Thank you, because we don't know what else we would be doing on a Tuesday night.
Probably sleeping.
I know. So, anyways, we're gonna get out of here, but I want to play you guys something before we go. My band has been not only writing and recording and putting out, to put out a record soon, but we've also been doing things like writing podcast themes. And so this is one of them. We're going to close out with this. So this is just, us. It's a kind of personal pride. It's good, heavy rock track. I think you guys like it. Short podcast themes, stuff like that are brief affair. So, all right, guys, thanks so much for hanging out. Hopefully next week we'll be able to get the Hawk back on, and you know, maybe we'll devote 20 minutes to Steely Dan so we can talk about it next week.
we'll let him vent.
All right, guys, you guys, everybody have a great week. We'll catch you all on the next Ludini Rock and Roll Circus.